And so our retreat has a formal beginning. As many of you know who have sat the retreats here with us, we often pick a theme for the retreat. And the theme that we've picked for this retreat is the five aggregates. Now that term, many of you I know are familiar with it, but those of you who are not, it may sound like a kind of a scary word. It sounds so technical. The word itself is translating the Pali word khanda, Sanskrit khanda, skanda. And that word is a very untechnical word, apparently, that is just used in kind of normal conversation to mean bunch or group or collection, something like that, heap. And this teaching of the five aggregates is a teaching by the Buddha to kind of lay out or describe the various areas of our experience. And he found this kind of way of slicing up the various aspects of our experience to be helpful with respect to understanding what's happening in our bodies and minds. This particular list is, I'll give you just the brief overview of these qualities, of these aspects of our experience. The Buddha kind of divided up all of our experience into these five piles, these five heaps. One heap is the heap of bodily experience. Another is the heap of what could be called the feeling tone of experience, whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. The next heap of experience is the aspect of recognizing our experience, perception. The next aspect of our experience is the whole process of thought, emotion, all of the kind of intentional activity that happens in the mind. That's a really big heap. And then the heap of consciousness, of knowing experience in the moment. And so the Buddha just, in terms of looking at our experience, he just divided up our experience in this way. And I'll explore a little bit why he did that. But just know that that everything in our experience, this is one way of understanding our experience, and everything in our experience, whatever we experience, is a collection of these five parts. So, for example, you're drinking a cup of coffee, which you can do here. I don't feel bad bringing it up. So you're drinking a cup of coffee, and that coffee, comes into your body. You experience with your body, you experience some bitterness, maybe some sweetness if you put sugar in your coffee, maybe the fattiness if you put some milk in your coffee. Probably are experiencing the liquid aspect on your tongue, and also maybe warmth. All of that is bodily experience. And then you will also be experiencing some feeling quality of that experience, not emotional tone here, but really simple feeling quality, just of whether the experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Some aspects of that coffee may have a pleasant quality. Some aspects may have an unpleasant quality. There will be, just like little bits of those that feeling of the coffee, pleasant, unpleasant. The bitterness piece may have a little bit of unpleasantness to it, but the sweet might have some pleasant, the creaminess might have some pleasant, the warmth might have some pleasant. So there's this feeling aspect of experience. And then there's the recognizing it. This other, another part of our experience is that we recognize that we're drinking coffee. This is a process in our mind by which we know what's happening to us as we navigate the world. We walk through the world and we know there are, you know, walls and windows and doors and floors and zabutons and zafus, and we know to walk through doors and not walk through windows. I mean, the mind does this kind of perception and recognizing what we're experiencing. And so as you're drinking your coffee, you're recognizing that it's coffee. Now, it may not happen too, like, obviously. Sometimes it does. You know, you pick it up, it's like, oh yeah, this is really good coffee. I like this coffee. But you are recognizing it, and that, like, might become really clear to you that you're recognizing it if you pick up somebody else's cup by accident and get a hit of ginger tea instead. You'll really recognize in that moment, whoa, what's that? That's not coffee. So this process of recognizing is happening with every experience. And then there is kind of a simplicity of recognizing this, a kind of the knowing aspect. Just recognizing that there is this contact with the tongue. And then there is the world of what is often called mental formations. This comes along with us with every moment of experience. Often, like for instance, around the coffee, it can manifest as thoughts about the coffee, thoughts about liking it or not liking it, thoughts about better coffee we've had or worse coffee we've had. Our ideas, opinions, emotions, thoughts, views, all of that is in this terrain of mental formation. And so everything in our experience falls into one of these five heaps. Everything. There's nothing that can't be sorted into one of these piles. So these five aggregates make up the building blocks of our experience. So these building blocks, the five aggregates describe the various aspects of these building blocks. I'll name them again. Experiences of the body. That's going to be experiences like pressure, heat, coolness, tightness, hardness, softness, sight, sound, bitterness, sweetness. That's body experience. And then feeling, whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Perception, the recognition, the kind of low-level recognition of, oh, this is coffee, that is a wall, this is light, this is a bell, that kind of just simple recognition of experience. Consciousness, the knowing aspect of experience, that we meet experience. And then mental formations, the area of intentional. It's often called intentional or volitional formations. It's the mental activity that has a volitional aspect to it. So this includes emotions, it includes thoughts, it includes what we could call states of mind, like mindfulness, for instance, is a volitional formation, and concentration is a volitional formation. Ideas, views are volitional formations. And so these five aggregates describe the building blocks of our experience. The Buddha also used these five aggregates to describe the processes of our experience. The very same five aspects are also understood to be the processes of our body and mind. So there's the bodily process, the feeling process, the perceiving process, the knowing process, the intending process. The process of our bodily experience, the process of our bodily experience results in the experience of bodily sensation. The process of our feeling results in the experience of the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. The process of perceiving results in the recognition of something being blue or red or wall or door. And so each of these five aggregates is not only, it both describes the results or what we are experiencing, and it describes the process by which we experience it. And of course, we'll be talking about each of these as we go during the retreat. These processes are very interdependent, interwoven. In our experience, it's kind of hard to pull them apart and see them one by one. We can start to do that, but they all interrelate with each other. So another example, for instance, around an experience of pain, for instance, in the knee, which may come up at some point on this retreat, some experience of unpleasant physical experience. So there's the actual sensation, which is related to the body and the bodily process. A tightness or burning or stabbing or twisting or aching or pulling. That's the body experience and the body process results in those experiences. Along with that contact with that experience, that's the consciousness piece. Already they're interrelated. The process of the body and the process of knowing are right next to each other. And then, almost immediately, feeling and perceiving happen. We recognize it as unpleasant, most likely, and we perceive it as being a pain in our knee. And then the thoughts start, the mental formations, ideas about the pain. It's a problem. What am I going to do? Maybe an emotion even comes up, an emotion of anger or frustration. And then related to that emotional experience, and this is where it starts to get really interesting. Because of an emotional experience, the mind then begins to orient towards what's the next thing I'm going to take in. Maybe because of that frustration, the mind starts scanning the rest of the body. Is there other places that hurt? And so there can be a kind of an orientation of the process of taking in new information. What next bodily experience does the mind orient to? Another unpleasant one, perhaps. And so these processes are so interrelated, interwoven. It's really, really helpful to recognize that, first of all, that these are processes at work. As we really explore our experience in this way, you know, we're going to be working with mindfulness to look at our experience all week, and we will be seeing all of these processes at work. We may not have the words for it at first, but this is essentially what we observe. These processes at work in our, with mindfulness. As we observe these processes with mindfulness, we see that they are simply processes. This is one of the big reasons the Buddha brought this teaching forward. He pointed to these five areas of experience as being kind of the key areas around which we congeal, we gravitate in clinging and a sense of identification. Each of these areas has its own kind of magnetic pull on our mind. Bhikkhu Anālayo talks about how we orient to a sense of self around each of these five areas. He says, this is what we consider. The body feels like where I am. The body is where I am. Feelings are how I am. Perception is what I am recognizing. Mental formations are why I am acting. And consciousness is whereby I am experiencing. And so with each of these areas, there's a particular hook of selfing that tends to happen. And that that hook of selfing tends to have us not remember that these are simply processes. So this exploration begins to kind of shake up the way that the mind tends to glue, or the confusion tends to glue around each of these areas and create a sense of self. And as we see too that these are processes, we see that there is the possibility for transformation. Processes are not fixed. And these processes interacting with each other mean that we can bring, for instance, the mental formations of mindfulness and investigation into play and change the direction of these processes from being oriented around clinging and reactivity to being interested in exploring what's actually happening here. And so we'll explore these five aggregates over the course of this week. If you've never heard this teaching before, that's okay, don't panic. We'll go over it in small steps. One of my teachers talks about this teaching a lot. And, you know, I think part of the reason he talks about it a lot, because it is such a helpful structure and framework through which to understand how we cling and how we create this sense of self, how this identification happens. So it's a really helpful teaching along those lines. And he also points out that, you know, it's not obvious to us. These things aren't necessarily obvious as experiences when we first hear about this. And so we have to kind of explore a little bit, begin to recognize what the building blocks of our experience are, begin to understand the building blocks of our experience. And as we understand the building blocks of our experience, again, we see that they're simply processes. And so the understanding of the building blocks of these of our experience, my teacher talks about this as being like learning how to read. You know, first you have to learn the alphabet. You learn what all the letters are. And then you can start to look at the letters and string them into words, and you learn a sound associated with each letter. So there's a C, an A, and a T. And you can kind of sound that out and make it the word cat. So initially, you kind of have to pull it apart. Initially, in the learning, you know, pulling it apart to see the various pieces. And then at some point, the mind just sees that word, recognizes it, understands it. C-A-T is cat. You don't have to think about the building blocks. And likewise, my teacher suggests, Saito Utejaniya suggests, it's helpful to explore each of these building blocks, each of these areas, individually, so that we get the sense of how they work. And then we don't have to worry about it. We don't have to try to pull them apart with every single meditation. But just begin to recognize when we are clinging and identifying around one of these particular areas. And so we'll be exploring these together this week. And I hope that this will be an interesting and illuminating exploration for all of us.
So, welcome to the meditation hall. This will be your meditation home for this week. And we have this second opening of the retreat here, a little more formally with the little Dharma talk. And we'll, in a little while, we'll do a little bit of chanting, that not to, for the sake of chanting, but the chanting kind of creates the context for what we're doing here and the support for what we're doing here. So I'll talk briefly about it. And for those of you who are new to retreat, it's this experience is different than probably anything else you've been through before. If those of you who have been on retreats before, or maybe many retreats before, you should also know that this experience is probably different than anything you've ever had done before. And please, if you've done this before, please don't bring with you expectations of what you think is supposed to happen or what you want is going to want to happen. Just be a beginner. For those of you who are beginners and lucky enough to have no expectations, you're ahead of the game. And if you have expectations or fears, you're probably right on schedule. It's all good. It's all good here. And I like to think, say a lot, that there's no mistakes on retreats. But it's a big transition to make if you're new. It's a little bit of a culture shift or culture shock even. So be patient, especially if the first day or two. And I think after a while, you'll get the hang of it and it all makes sense. But it can be quite challenging at first for new people. You've now been here for a few hours, and been a couple hours since we had our meeting downstairs. And are there any questions you have about being here that would help you feel more comfortable before you go to sleep? Anything that seems like you'd like to know that would settle you a little more? All seems good, straightforward, or at least you already trust the system, the choreography, and everything just flows along. So a couple of things I'd like to say is that some of you are practice leaders. You sit up here to ring the bell. And so the idea is if you're sitting on a zafu, you sit up here where I'm sitting. It will bring a chair over from somewhere and put the chair here. So if you're a chair sitter, anybody, those of you who are ringing bells, anybody a chair sitters? Lexi? Great. So we'll have a chair over here so you can use that. And we'll leave it here for the course of the retreat. And if what you should know, if you've never rung this bell or rung bells before, it's rather important that you listen to this instruction. And that is, undoubtedly you'll try to hit it lightly, but if you've never done it before, it's very common for people to hit it stronger than what's called for in this bell. It's actually very light touch, and so I'd encourage you to err on the side of doing it too lightly. If you've never done this, just don't worry about it. It's inaudible the first time. You know, because you can always adjust it and do it again. But if the first time you hit it, it goes at the end of a sitting, you can't quite adjust that. Everybody's like, oh, you know. So just hit it, just, and then slowly, if you feel like it needs to be louder, you can do the next one. And the usual thing is to ring it three times. And so it's a very special journey we're going to go on. And the journey into the five aggregates is a journey, I think of as a journey of intimacy, of going inward to some of the deepest regions of who we are and what goes on in our life. And it's very special to have these doors of the aggregates to kind of get closer and closer and more present for yourself. The aggregates have a lot to do with being with what's happening here and now. And so it's a particular way of doing that. And it's a sacred journey. It's a special time to do it. And so, as Andrea said, we'll go through it step by step through these days. But in this sacred, intimate journey into ourselves and into the full range of who we are for all our... The idea is this practice holds all of who we are. And there's the joys and the sorrows and challenges and, you know, the joyful discoveries. All kinds of things will happen. And the idea is there's no mistakes here. It's all to be included here. But this intimacy, this sacredness, this specialness, this inclusivity of everything that we make space for, until we get really strong and familiar with it, it's best to do it in an environment that offers a lot of support for it. And we have a support of our community, of other people who are practicing here, and I'd encourage you to feel the support of others who are sitting and practicing and tune into it, because it's quite something to have this gathering of people coming together for a week to do what we're going to do. It's easy once you get into it, or if you've done it many times before, to take it for granted. This is like normal. It's a normal thing to do, but these people are not doing it normally, you know, or something. It's phenomenally special what's going on here. It's very rare in the world, and so to appreciate what we have here together and to feel the support of it is really good. But also to be a supporter of it, to care for it. And we want to care for the community and for the practice and for ourselves. And these two things, to be supported and to be a supporter, to be cared for in a sense and to care for others. These, it goes hand in hand. I like to believe they best work together. We receive and we give at the same time. And the support, one of the ways that we represent one of the most profound kinds of support in the Buddha Dharma is that of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And what we call the refuge or the protections or the supports or the home base for our lives. And it's partly creating a context for our life, for our practice, that's larger than our individual desires and ideas of self and our philosophies of life, but there's a larger thing going on here that supports us. And the Buddha clearly represents not the Buddha himself, but rather the awakening of the Buddha, the possibility of having a heart that's at ease, at peace, that's awake, that has compassion. And to have this, this is a potential we all have, and to take refuge and support in this amazing capacity for freedom and for awakening and for compassion, even if you feel like you're light years away from that. Maybe that's when you need to be reminded, just it is part of this scene, it is part of this environment. There are people like the Buddha who have realized it and shared it with others, and it's a guiding star and encouragement for all of us. We take refuge in the Dharma, and the Dharma means many things, but one of the things it means is the process of practice, the process of aligning ourselves or harmonizing ourselves for what is true, to be honest, to really see what's happening here, and to somehow align ourselves with that which is healthy, that which is true, that which is compassionate, the practice of mindfulness. And there's a whole process that gets put in motion when we engage and trust the practice. I've learned that the practice is bigger and more effective than whatever I can do. That's some strange thing to say, right? Like, you know, who does the practice besides me? But I do the practice, and I've learned to trust this practice profoundly because it seems to work in spite of me. Isn't that great? And I kind of huff and puff and, you know, try to do what I try to do. And, you know, mostly when I have ideas of what is supposed to happen and I'm supposed to do it, and I usually just tie myself in knots. But I have to do my part. I have to keep showing up and be present and try to be spacious and kind to what's going on, relax, and really be present in a clear way. And then it seems the practice is bigger than me, it's greater than me, and it's really great. And that's the Dharma. Supported by the Dharma, it's happening. And then we're supported by the Sangha. And the Sangha here is your fellow practitioners. It's really remarkable, as I said earlier, to have these people here. But it's also the community of people down through the ages who have been a witness of how effective the Dharma is and how true awakening is, that this is a real possibility for all of us. And so we remind ourselves about this, and we get support from it. And it's helpful sometimes to have support with something that's bigger than our own particular, you know, small mind, or some of you have really big minds. Whatever, you know, minds you have, whatever fears you have, whatever anxieties you have, angers you have, whatever, it's something bigger is holding you, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And it might be that when you're here, to remind yourself times of challenge will help kind of remind you it's okay. It's okay to stay and see it out as it goes. So we begin retreats with chanting the refuges, kind of evoking them, reminding ourselves of them, and that we have this support. So the way we do this is that I will, we do a call and response. I will recite one word, and then you can repeat after me. If I get a sense that we're getting a hang of it, then I'll do a line, and you can repeat the line after me. And if you don't quite catch on to the words because you're new to all this, that's completely fine. It's equally effective if you hum along. So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. So for those of you who don't know, this is a salutation or paying homage or respect to the Buddha. And with all these things we do three times because sometimes it goes deeper into the heart if you say it three times, if you relax and let it go in. So you did pretty well. So why don't we do the whole line after me? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
And word by word, Buddham, Saranang, Gacchami, Dhammam, Saranang, Gacchami, Sangham, Saranam, Gacchami. Then we repeat it two more times, those lines, but the first time we say it with the word dutiyampi, meaning for a second time, and then tatiyampi, meaning for the third time. So you can repeat line after line with me. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
So the third time we'll start by tatiyampi, but this time, since we're all in it together, let's do it together with me, okay?
Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
Thank you. So this is how we're supported. And then we also want to be supporters of everyone. And one of the very important ways we do that is by what's called the five precepts, the five guidelines, ethical guidelines of how we're going to live here together. And they are not to kill, not to take what's not given, not to engage in sexual misconduct. In the context of the retreat, means to be celibate, not to lie, and not to intoxicate yourself with alcohol or drugs. And I suspect that there is a very, very teeny, small, almost impossible chance that any of you are coming here intending to kill or to steal or, you know, or this is likely, you know, this is an unlikely behavior on retreat. However, I think that the practice is such a deep and intimate thing, what's going on here for us, that we're touching corners of our hearts, corners of our psyche, that are ancient, that are deep, that are tender, that are all kinds of things. And when we say that we're going to live by these precepts, we're kind of speaking to something in our bigger or deeper or something very important in our psyches, something that needs to hear that this is a place of safety. This is a community of people who are dedicated to care for each other and offer each other the gift of safety. There's many, 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 many people in this world who do not have safety in their lives, in their homes, in their communities. And they don't have a chance to settle and really kind of come home in a deep, intimate way to wake up. And so to do that for each other here, to create an environment of safety, creates a really important context for all of us to be able to open up, to be able to let go and relax, to be able to touch these kind of deeper, tender places. So we make a commitment at retreats to not to kill. And it's not just simply not killing each other, but also not killing insects. You know, we really want to respect all of life. There's something, again, that goes deep into the psyche, into the heart. If we know that even animals are protected, insects are protected here, are safe. And then we commit ourselves to not taking what is not given. It's a higher kind of standard for the heart than not stealing. If it's not offered, clearly offered, don't take it. If you wonder whether it's offered or not, you could ask. You could leave a note and find out. One of the representations of this for me was here at IRC, was in a retreat, I think in September. Some man dropped his wallet downstairs, and he didn't know it. It was a fat wallet. I wonder what was in it. Fat wallet. And so someone put it in the palm of the Buddha downstairs. And it stayed there for, I don't know, 36 hours or something. It stayed there for quite a while until someone, I guess, figured out whose it was and found the person. And he didn't even see it there. So, you know, didn't know it was missing. But it just stayed. It just was safe there. So we don't take what's not given. And then no sexual misconduct is very important on retreat. It's okay to have Vipassana romances. It's okay to have, you know, have sexual feelings and, you know, it'll happen. You have sexual fantasies and a little bit our hope is if you do a lot of it that sooner rather than later you get tired of it. Because it can get kind of a little bit, you know, unhelpful for this process. But it'll happen often enough. So it's okay. But the idea with no sexual misconduct is you keep it to yourself. You don't go sit next to someone because, you know, you're probably, you know, made for each other. You know, you're going to, it's a silent retreat, you're not going to say anything, but, you know, you could kind of just, you know, give them some tea or offer to do their dishes or, you know, something, right? No sexual misconduct is keep it to yourself. You don't vibe, you don't, you know, look, you don't go find where they're sitting so you can sit near them, have tea near them. Just keep it to yourself. And it's very important because not just only for you, because the social interaction that goes on keeps the mind agitated, keeps the mind engaged in a social sphere that is a great sphere, but keeps us from dropping deeper into ourselves and a deeper intimacy. And that's why here in retreat, there's a strong tendency for people not to make eye contact much during the retreat. And for people who are new, this can be quite disorienting because out in the world, when people don't make eye contact to you too much, it's like bad news. And so, you know, like what, you know, these are unfriendly people. These are friendly people, but there's something about the intimacy and the subtleness that gets supported by if we don't kind of, even the social contact of eyes meeting doesn't happen. It's okay if it happens. If it does, you're welcome to smile. But the idea is not to do it. And even to that degree. And in terms of sexuality, there's a lot of suffering in the world around sexuality. Some of it is really deep. And you don't know what you'll be touching into another person, what happens in the context of this, of here, and if somehow your sexuality spills out into the room or into others, that you don't know what, you know, finally someone who felt they came to a place that was safe from that and refuge from whatever trauma they had. And it's very, very disturbing to have that sexual interest in whatever come in. So it's very important to keep this idea. And then not lying. Mindfulness, you know, honesty is mindfulness out loud. And it's kind of like you can't really do mindfulness with lying because that you're kind of like you're going in opposite direction. Like, you know, you want to go north and you start going south. And you have to go really long to go the same, you know, to go that way. So lying just doesn't make any sense in this context. But in terms of supporting others, to be able to trust others and to open up and to finally be in a safe place. Even, you know, the vibe of someone lying and being dishonest, I believe it kind of spreads out and touches, especially the people who are most sensitive to it, maybe the people who have been most betrayed in their lives. And even though they don't even recognize it, it has a vibe. net or a atmosphere that spreads out. We want to protect it. So one of the ways you support others is by not lying. And then people struggle with drugs and alcohol. And there also it goes against the grain of what we're trying to do here. We're trying to be clear in our minds and be self-reliant and really discover how to work through our challenges. And so to do drugs and alcohol gets in the way of what we're trying to do here. But more important for me is the support we give others. We live in a world where many people have a lot of challenges and a lot of suffering and pain. And we don't know who's here. There might be people here who this is their refuge. They're on the edge, in their lives around some addiction. And so we want to create a safe place for them. And if other people, if somehow that the container of no alcohol and drugs is broken here, even privately, and you think you're under your covers in your room, I think it's not really private here. We were so connected here in the community, and we want to support everyone and not challenge someone who has come here for refuge from their difficult lives. So this is what we do. This is how we support others. So the way we do this one is that I'll recite it in English in two parts, each one, and you repeat after me. For the sake of our training together, I commit not to kill. For the sake of our training together, I commit not to take what is not given. For the sake of our training together, I commit not to engage in sexual misconduct. For the sake of our training together, I commit not to lie. For the sake of our training together, I commit not to take drugs or alcohol. Thank you for that very much. By design, we try to end these evenings around now, right on schedule. So about 8:30, so that you can go to bed early. It's common for people to be tired coming to retreat. The first day of retreat people are often very tired. Please don't take the tiredness of the first day, if you're tired tomorrow, please don't take that tiredness. Don't make any conclusions, major conclusions, just kind of be gracious and be tired and practice the best you can. And don't worry. It's very, very common. Don't feel like you're the only one who's falling asleep here. You probably even see me sleeping. So it's okay. And be gracious with it and don't be angry at being tired. But we try to go to bed early, so in a couple of minutes you can go to bed, or if you're not tired, you're welcome to stay up here and sit as you wish. I think what I'd like to ask is maybe if Matthew, in order to end the evening, unless Andre has more to say, would you like to dedicate the merit of the evening and as we start the retreat?
And so we practice for ourselves. And we practice for others. And in the end, there's no way to practice for oneself without benefiting others. That the love and joy, freedom that we cultivate can't help but spill out beyond the bounds of our own hearts. May we dwell in the many ripples of goodness we'll experience together.